Hey there, Getting in the Loop listeners. Ever wondered what can be done in your industry to help create a more circular economy? I've put together a short ebook to help you navigate key circular trends in textiles and apparel, ICT and electronics, and packaging. And it includes links to related reports as well as relevant Getting in the Loop podcast episodes. It's yours to receive when you join up to our podcast newsletter at circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. So head over to our website to get your copy of the Circular Sectors Navigator. That's again, circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. Hi, I'm Katie Whelan, and join me each week as I talk with experts around the globe about circular economy. You'll find out what's being done to make it a reality, and if it can really solve the problems it promises. It's time for Getting in the Loop. I'm your host, Katie Whelan, and welcome to a new season of Getting in the Loop. Our guiding theme this season is circular business. We'll hear from entrepreneurs, investors, and researchers who are making circular economy happen through reuse, repair, refurbishment, and more. Kicking off this new season today is our first entrepreneur, Tom Leenders of Gerrard Street. Gerrard Street is a modular, high-end headphone company proving how circular products can be brought to market. Tom co-founded Gerrard Street after graduating with a Master's of Science in Integrated Product Design from Delft University of Technology. Now over 6 years later, Tom shares what he's learned and how Gerrard Street has evolved, including a recent change in the business model. In this episode, you'll discover why Gerrard Street doesn't only offer headphones via subscription anymore. You'll also learn about the new type of customer they've added to their customer base since the COVID-19 pandemic. And finally, we'll hear about the biggest challenge that they've faced so far regarding the design of their products. Ready to hit the ground running with this new season of the Getting in the Loop podcast? Thank you, Tom, for coming on the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm super excited to have you on today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And before we get started, I often ask all the guests where they're calling from. So where are you calling from, Tom?
I'm calling from Utrecht. I live in Utrecht, and this is my workroom.
Excellent. So also still kind of in Corona times, working from home.
Yes, every Wednesday, because I have a boy, which is a little bit older than 1.5 years. And my parents are taking care of him today, but then I'm working at home as well. So it's more easy.
Yeah, excellent. So I'm really excited to dive into Gerrard Street. Could you just start us off with a little bit of a general introduction? What is Gerrard Street?
Yes, good question. What is Gerrard Street? We make modular headphones, and you can either buy or rent them. And the cool thing about them is that they are fully modular, so we can replace all the components. And when something breaks, we send you a new one. We retrieve the old one and recycle or reuse the parts. So we don't throw away anything. That's our mission.
Yeah, excellent. So basically, it is, would this be wrong to say, like a subscription model for headphones, but with thinking from circular economy perspective?
Yes, it was like till 1 year ago. And we changed the business model a bit. And now you can also buy them. And then we say you have free repairs forever. So it basically is a lifetime subscription, but you pay it once.
Yeah. Okay. That's really cool. And I'm curious why you decided to do that. Was that like a customer demand? Like customers wanted this?
Both. For your cash flow, subscriptions are really, really hard. So you need to pre-finance your production. You need to pre-finance your marketing cost. Cost a lot of money. So it was difficult to scale. And also we did a collaboration with a famous Dutch artist, Styx, that And then only people could rent the headphone, it's a pay per month. And we get a lot of feedback from clients. Hey, I love the concept, I love the product, I love your brands, but I just want to buy them. Why can't I? And then we thought, okay, we need to give them that option. And then we wanted to stay humble to our mission as well. So, okay, how can we sell them and still do repairs and retrieve all the broken parts? And then we thought, okay, then they need to have like a lifetime repair service together with the headphone. And we're doing it right now. So that's super cool. And we can do that because we are monitoring all repairs for 4 years now, and it's stable. And the design is done in such a way that most parts which break easily can also be replaced easy. So that's lowering down repair costs. So that's why we can have this model now.
I think that's really cool. And the way that you're able to do that is because you have designed these headphones, as you said, to be easily repaired. So could you walk us through a little bit about how you went about that? Because I think that's really interesting. A lot of companies that maybe started off with like subscription, they often don't do their own design of products. They just take existing products and then they start, like, for example, leasing them. So tell us like why you decided to do it a bit differently, and what did that process look like?
Yeah, we started from the bottom. So we didn't have a product and we didn't have a client. So our vision was, we just want to propel the circular economy. We thought, okay, nobody's doing this, so we need to make circular consumer electronics. That was our starting point. Then we looked to the market and say, okay, headphones, they damage quite easily. I think they break also quite easily. So a repair service for that and making it modular will sound like a good idea. Then we went to the market and asked people, okay, what are your problems regarding headphone usage? And so we started with a subscription model. And then we had two options. One, we don't have a modular headphone. We just bought in high-end headphones and lease them to the clients with a white labeling model. Or we design one ourselves, which can easily be repaired. So we have low repair cost and low operational cost. And then we made two models out of that, and we calculated, and then we saw, okay, we cannot do this economically in the right way if we don't make the headphone modular. Because then if, like, in your headphone, if something breaks, I will need to send you a new headphone. You need to send a complete headphone back. And then I need to repair it somehow, which most of the cases you can't. So that won't work for us. So we needed to lower down, one, the operational cost for repairs, but also the shipment cost. We send everything via email, via mail. So everything fits the mailbox. That also really lowered down shipment cost.
That's true. If it can't go through the mail slot, the price goes exponentially up. I know that from...
It's doubled or tripled. So...
If I was to design my game again, I would have designed it to be able to fit through the mail slot. That's like something that you learn the hard way about that. But I think it's great that you had the foresight to see that. It reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen like the Agency of Design, how they did this, like this toaster and what this toaster would look like, designing a toaster for the circular economy. And they had three different examples of, did you see that? I think it was back in like 2014 or something. I'll have to send you the link.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, but they have like a toaster and then they designed it to like go through the mail slot. But the key difference here is that was a concept, but yours is actually a reality. So.
Yeah. We did also a project to make an audio box, you know, a Bluetooth box for music, speaker. To design in such a way it also fit the mailbox. So we wanted to have like a modular small speaker, but that was really, really hard.
Oh, just to be able to make it compact and.
Yeah, so we paused that project and say, okay, maybe in the future, but for now, we don't gonna do this.
So, speaking about repairs and being able to be designed for repairs, what you talked a little bit earlier, you mentioned about monitoring the repairs, and you've now monitored the repairs kind of for 4 years. So, what does that kind of back end look like? Is it like a system that you've built in-house for doing this? And what kind of happens to the parts and things that come back to you?
We have a more a back end of WordPress. They have WordPress subscription, and we did a lot of plugins and did some coding ourselves. It's like so we have like a back end for that. Someone has a subscription online when he can log in and order say, hey, my cable's broken, order a new cable. Then our system knows, okay, this subscription just ordered a new cable, so we can track all the old repairs as well. And so basically we build it from scratch, but with plugins. So sometimes we need to code a bit ourselves, but it's really lean. And how we handle it is that the user replace the components themselves. If you like, for instance, if we send you an ear cushion, then we send you a new ear cushion together with that return envelope. So the broken part you put in the envelope and you send it back to us. Then we look at the part and then we say, okay, we can refurbish it. We can or fix it, and if not, then we just stock it up until we have enough, and then we recycle it.
Okay. So you work with partners for like the recycling aspect. And what would you estimate? Could you give like an estimate of the things that come back, how much you're able to repair versus like recycle?
I think we can reuse. It depends on the type of component, like speakers and all the plastic parts. I think we can reuse 80-85% of it. Cables we can't reuse because it's soldering them again, it won't work. And so we really need to recycle them, as well as the ear cushions. They're made of PU leather, so that's people say vegan leather,
Okay, yeah.
So artificial leather. That's also really hard to reuse at the moment, and it's also gross. People don't want a reused ear cushion, so we always have new ear cushions for a user. Everything that touches your head, like the headband and the ear cushions, are always new. And that's something we validated in the beginning. We just asked people, okay, what do you think we can repair, what things we can reuse? And all the people say, I don't want to have reused ear cushions.
Yeah, exactly. Like from a hygiene or a hygienic purpose, a point of view. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, interesting. As I was wondering about that, like if there was any kind of regulations about types of things that can be reused, or if it was just a customer kind of, a customer, as you said, like a customer desire. So it seems that. Are there sort of any regulations that are related to your reuse of the headphones?
Not really to the reuse, but every headphone needs to be CE regulated, and that's at certain standards. So when you reuse a component, it also needs to be CE approved in that way. When you reuse an ear cushion, there shouldn't be hard, pointy things in it, which can scratch your skin, stuff like that. But the headphones are always checked when sent to people.
I guess it's probably quite an easy swap if you are just like taking an ear cushion and then putting a new Gerard Street standard ear cushion on
Yeah,
it, so.
it's super simple. That was one of the design demands we had. Like, okay, everybody with two left hands need to be able to do switch components. You don't going to solder anything. You don't do anything with a battery, stuff like that. We will do that for you. You just have easy parts. We just fit in like Lego.
Yeah. If you can build Lego, then you can swap your headphone components. Yeah.
Exactly. So it comes via mail, and it's sent in a letterbox. And when you open it, you see all the parts laying there, and this super cool package you put in, you set in together with yourself, by yourself, and then you can listen. So everyone has to immediately the experience. Okay, I can do this.
Yeah. When you were talking about this and this kind of putting it together yourself, it reminded me, I heard you on another podcast a couple years ago, I think. And there you had mentioned that like people really feel ownership or like attachment kind of to the headphones because, you know, it's kind of like a DIY yourself to put it together. So I was curious if this impacts your business model, because I could imagine that then people don't really want to, maybe if they're on a subscription and they feel attached to it, do they want to give it back or do they want to actually own the product?
Now the funny thing is now we have both options. So some people switch from the subscription to the buy model, and that's possible. I think I don't know about my heart. It's not a lot. A lot of people also just have the subscription, and also the. Because we're selling the headphone as well, the story is a bit different than 2 years ago. And I think, but now the people think when they assemble the headphone themselves, it's more like, okay, now they understand how the components are replaced. And it tells a story that we don't throw away the modules. It tells a story that we can easily replace and fix it. So that changed a bit. So it's now less about ownership, it's more about we repair it and we don't throw away stuff.
Yeah. So getting to know your product and feeling connected to it. And even if you're not, yeah, even if you do want to then own it, you still have like the, as you said, free repairs for life. So you still have that kind of, then it helps with that like connection and bond, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yes.
So, let me think. One of the questions that I like to ask people when they come on the podcast, because oftentimes I am guilty of sort of already asking this question, and maybe I should have asked this earlier, but I like to ask the question of, is there some sort of misconception or a question that you always get from people about Gerard Street that you would love to just answer for the final time, if only it would be that simple? So my question, Tom, is there like a misconception that most people have about Gerard Street?
I think there's a big misconception in the perception of sustainability and how people look at sustainability. I think we get a lot of feedback that people wanted to have a more sustainable headphone than we already have. So like that we also need to have better recycled plastic inside, that we take care of all the small components, like have fair gold, stuff like that. So make it completely circular. But then I always say, okay, I have that ambition, but now I first need to focus on scaling my business. And when we reach that scale, it's quite easily to, I think we are 85% circular at the moment, and to go to 99, that step is way more easy when you already have a really big client base, when you earn a lot of them, and then you can put it in R&D. And now also we need to grow a lot. And then people think, that we sell more if we have a more sustainable headphone. But that is what, that's really one of the things we validated in the beginning, that that's really not the case. That because we did a lot of testing online with sustainable target groups, with technical star customer groups, like different kind of customer profiles, and we saw that the sustainable versions of the websites didn't convert at all, and people just don't spend more money to it.
So it seems like the proportion of people that would be kind of maybe falling under like the sustainable category, that's not actually a large portion of the customer base. And so in order to therefore, then you need to be able to have a large customer base, then it's just a small proportion that's in that sustainable category.
Yes. But the cool thing is that we noticed that that base is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger over the years. Way more people are interested in sustainability. But first of all, you just need to have a cool and kick-ass and good quality headphone. I mean, that's the thing you buy. People just want quality. Things need to work well. So you also need to focus really on that part of your product. And that's really where are you putting your focus? Where are you putting your money in regarding the design, more circular or higher quality sound? You know, sometimes you can do both. And now we say, okay, first in the first coming years, we're really focusing on getting the best product in the market as possible. And then when we reach that, then we're going to make it more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And you can even take your customers along on the journey, I would imagine. And
yeah, we do. And we all already quite far, because we can replace all components inside. We can repair. We don't throw away the headphone. Our lifetime of our headphone is like, I think, 5 to 6 times higher than a normal one. I mean, we already, doing a lot of good things, and that's really cool.
What would you say is like the part of the headphone that kind of, that sees the most repairs? I guess you could answer this in two ways, I could imagine, because I'm not quite sure of the question I'm asking. I'm trying to ask like the biggest difference between a Gerrard Street headphone and like a high market, just normal off the shelf headphone. Like what's going to fail first, and what's the problem with the high market headphone that yours solves?
I think it depends for every model. Like your brand, Bose, different things breaks than the high-end version of Sony's. It's just different kind of materials, different kind of how things are fit together. But first of all, the cable, when we only had a cable model, not the Bluetooth or the ANC, then the cable broke the most quite easily. That was one of, and now we are fully Bluetooth and ANC. The things that touches your body, your head, so the ear cushions and all just the wearable parts, they tear over time, so we need to replace that. We still have a cable in the headband that can be sometimes a bit can damage. So I think cables and ear cushions are the most repairs we do at the moment. And sometimes we need to replace a sound box because we have a battery problem, or there's a problem with ANC after sometimes, but that's quite easy to fix because we just send a new sound box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for mine, somehow I need to get some Gerrard Street headphones. So this is really bad. I'm being exposed right now. But the one kind of saving grace, I guess, is that I've had these for since probably like 2015 or 16 or so. And I have replaced the like, I don't know, the ear pad, that's what you call it, right? So I have actually replaced that and gotten some spare parts. It was a little bit sketchy because it was kind of off like I don't know if it was official Bose like ear pads that I was getting, but I got some replacement ones and replaced them myself. So
yeah, and you are willing to do so I think 90% of normal users don't do this. And I also see it as a big hassle to order some things on a sketchy website. You need to wait. We have just promised next day delivery. You have your new part and you can listen to your music again.
Yeah. That's an interesting point that you say there in terms of this kind of, it's brand certified, basically, in terms of like the parts that you're getting are brand certified. They're Gerrard Street and they're official. They're coming from you, as opposed to mine, which were like, okay, well, I hope this is compatible with mine. I just ordered it off of a random website. So I can imagine that's like an added customer bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people also really find it super cool when they first swap their first repair, you know. They really think, I really like it, how it's been done and how easy it is. And then they becoming more like really ambassadors after they did their first repair.
Yeah. Do you know, like, if a lot of your customers come from like word of mouth or if it's from like Facebook and kind of like online marketing?
That also really changed. Like, 1 year ago, when we only had the subscription, I think 80% came from online ads, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, a bit, Google ads a bit, but it was like 80%, most of it. Then we switched to the buy model as well, the free repairs forever model. And now we see that organic growth, word of mouth, is like 80% of the sales. And it's also because a lot of GDPR regulations online become much stricter. So your pixel, it's really way harder to track sales online. And I think it's allowed to track it for 7 days. And like a more expensive headphone, you think for 2 weeks. And if you saw us on the ad and order it online 2 weeks later, at the moment we cannot track that correctly. 2 years ago, we could track that correctly because the rules were different of the game. So that's also why we have more like organic growth and organic sales. But word of mouth is important. Referrals are important. So people get cool stuff when they refer a friend. Stuff like that is also...
Where is Gerrard Street? Where is your customer base right now? You're in the Netherlands, and are you also in the UK or?
We have some clients in the UK, some in Sweden, but less than 100 over there. So it's really small. We just did some tests if we can copy paste our advertisement and service over there, and if that would work. It's way harder than that. We really need to build a brand. Work with cool artists, stuff like that. So we need a PR agency on the ground in every country. That's what one of our learnings. But we are planning a launch in Germany next year. So that would be the first country to go to. And we have a small partner in France. So we also have some clients in France at the moment. But that's also testing phase, see how it works.
Mm-hmm. And why Germany?
Because due to Brexit, shipments, stuff like that, they are way more difficult. And because of our service, we do a lot of shipments. It needs to be handled swiftly. So then we focus on the second biggest market in Europe, Germany. Also, it fits the culture. They are more advanced in sustainable thinking than the Netherlands, way more advanced. It's more in there, already more embedded over there. So I think that also matches better with our brand.
Yeah. I wondered if it was about just the sort of the market size, but I guess, yeah. So logistics is like really big challenge for you. And
It is not, it's not a big challenge if we accept, okay, parts will be there within 1 week, then it isn't a challenge. But we think, okay, customer service is super important. We think our service with the headphone is our USP. So we want that, have that next day delivery promise. And then you have to have skill in a country to do so.
Do you have partnerships with logistics providers for that kind of, or is it just right now like buying off?
No, we have a partner in the Netherlands, and now we're looking for a good partner for or Europe or Germany.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. The shipping, I can imagine that we get it quite expensive in order to do like the next day delivery, but also on the same side, it's quite key because you don't want to be able to have to wait to repair your headphones.
Yeah, and that's only one side. We also need to get them back, the parts. So that's also a hurdle to take.
Though I imagine that could take a little bit longer, right? Yeah, you're not as worried about the speed on the return.
We are, but that's really hard to find a good partner for that.
Okay. Yeah. So it's also time restrictive on the return side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I have one last question before we go into the final question, which is, maybe I should have asked this at the beginning, but are you also working with organizations like business to business for the headphones or?
Yeah. We started to do it last year in the end of the year. We noticed due to Corona, we saw an increase in working from home, working with a headphone at home, the need for a good active noise cancelling headphone because you have roommates or a child or your neighbors make a lot of noise. The headphone is just really something, it's really essential on your working kit these days. And we didn't have an active noise cancelling headphone before, and that was really key for B2B sales. And I think now 1/5 of our revenue is coming from B2B partners. So we see we don't have like the really big clients yet, like 200 plus sales, but we see a good fit with creative agencies, consultancies, people where young people work between 20 till 80 employees. Because when companies become bigger than that, they just have a budget to choose their own headphone. And it's way harder to sell one type of headphone to the whole company.
Yeah, I could imagine that like the free repairs for forever is a really nice sort of hook for companies as well. Because yeah, as you are switching different employees and as they come and go, then you can just, you know, maybe swap out different like the ear covers and different things like that. So it's essentially just buy, yeah.
That is one thing, but also the sustainable part, that they want to have a better impact themselves, so they can buy in sustainable electronics. That's also really important for them. And also just some never worked with headphones before, so we introduced the headphone over there and they see, okay, we work way more efficient. So
yeah, it's important for now when people are working from home, but if people go back to the office, or when people go back to the office too, it's a big thing for people there too, because a lot of these open offices, you know,
Exactly. You have the same problems only in a different location, because you have all kind of noises over there. You really need to concentrate, and the headphone works perfectly for that.
This has been super fun, Tom. I could probably talk to you for another hour just going through all the nitty-gritty things, but I want to be respectful of your time. So I want to ask you the question that I ask all of the Getting in the Loop podcast guests as the last question, which has to do with this board game that I created when I was a student at TU Delft. So yeah. We both were students at UDelft sort of at the same time, and my graduation thesis was this In the Loop game. So in the game, you're a product producing company and you have to travel around the board to collect different materials to make your product, but there are different events that happen in the game that can either help or hinder you in obtaining your materials and making your product. So these events, they change the market conditions in the game, and they're often inspired by like real world happenings. So if you could create some sort of event for this game, what kind of event would you think that you'd like to add?
One of the biggest events of the last 2 years, I think, is Corona, and we couldn't imagine how our supply chain has changed because of that. And like materials are getting scarcer, the MOQs, mineral order quantities, are going up. It's super tough producing at the moment. Rules are getting tougher each month. So like 3 years ago, when you told me maybe a virus can change the world, I would say no, of course not. And now it's such an event, it just happened, and it's super. And I think we didn't see anything about that yet. But upcoming year, there will be super many shortage on chips, also some kind of plastics. I know ABS will be harder. For me as well, like normally I could just quite easily buy in Bluetooth chips and active noise cancelling chips, and it becomes way harder, prices going up, batches are super big at the moment. So that really changed. I think that is really an event you couldn't foresee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have to try to have some sort of contingency plan, but yeah, it's difficult to have a contingency plan if you don't know exactly what's coming.
Yeah, for instance, I spoke to another entrepreneur, and he's doing really, really well, but he wants to produce new products. He needs a chipset for that, and now Tom, do I need to buy in 200,000 chipsets of that version so I can produce next year? But that's a huge risk, because if the sales go down, he has a lot of chipset, which it costs a lot of money. It's a huge risk. So yeah, the how you buy in parts right now is really different. Some parts are really scarce and you need to buy more of them so you can produce more.
I can also imagine for a company like Gerrard Street, if you're offering free repairs for life, then you need to make sure that you have compatibility of these.
Yeah, that's super hard. We need to change the chipset at the moment. So we are going to introduce a chipset because the old one, nobody's delivering it anymore. Okay, how the hell are you making those things compatible? That's really one of our R&D challenges. Okay, you have different kind of chipsets. You want to maintain the same quality. You want to maintain the same sound. How are you going to do this? Are you going to make a next version, or are you going to make two versions and all parts are swappable or not? Those are the things we need to have answers for right now. So we're working on that at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah, you. Backwards compatibility, right? That's the term for if you have something that you've already produced and now you're having a new module, for example, then you need to see if it's compatible to the previous one.
Yeah, like for instance, we have the headband and we have the USB-C cables. The USB-C cables need to be compatible for both models. Okay, how to do so? Doing this really, really, really tough.
Yeah.
When I started Jerryseed, I never thought that I needed to design such things. Think about such things.
Wow, that is, I think, we've just kind of hit the nail on the head for one of the most challenging kind of aspects. Maybe we'll have to have you on the podcast again to talk about this again. We're also at my work, and I'm a researcher at RISE in Sweden, and one of the things that we're doing a lot of work on actually is this, like, we call it future adaptive design. So, like, how do you create products so that you can actually kind of have this adaptability? So, time for a next podcast episode in the future.
Cool.
So yeah, but Tom, tell us where listeners can go to get a copy of their own Gerard Street headphone.
They can go to gerardstreet.nl, and it's quite easy. And also Google Gerard Street, and then you find it as well. So Gerard is with a G-E-R-R-A-R-D, double R.
And I'll have a link in the show notes as well, so people can just check it out from there.
Cool.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Tom. And we'll have to have you come back another time to tell us about the design challenges part two.
Yeah. So. Give me 6 months and I hopefully have an answer.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks for listening to today's episode. We have a number of circular economy resources on our website. These include free downloads and new games to support you on your circular economy journey, especially if you like to engage others in the circular economy. Just head over to gettinginthelooppodcast.com and click resources.